So we have Eileen from Toronto Region Board of Trade. We have Alessandra from MTO. We have Brad Butt from Mississauga Board of Trade. We have Councillor Fonseca. We have Amanda Chum from Transport Canada. We have Daryl Shipp. We have Sabir, and we have Savik, Shane Raymond, and Stephen Tufts. We have Suzanne Acton Gervais. She is replacing Francesca Iricato, who has retired from the National Airline Council. I see Trevor McPherson has just joined us. We have Margaret Tomei from MTO. And just going back up, I think that's all the members. We do have somebody on the phone, 613-552-8249.
Hi, yes, this is Avery Campbell with ACTA.
Oh, hi, Avery. Welcome. And it looks like our presenters are here as well. Ruba Al-Nazar from the Community Investment team. We have Stuart Bricknell, and we have Neil Samuel. And I did see Andrew Pater as well. And just a couple of other updates to the resource member list. Daryl Van Morsel from the City of Brampton has changed roles, and Denise McClure, the senior manager in the Economic Development Department, will be replacing Daryl, but she is not. She cannot be here today. Dave Parker from Parco from NAV Canada has retired, and we're waiting for a new the new person's name. And Matt McNamara has left Destination Toronto, and Andrew Weir is working on getting us a new person for the next meeting. And that is it.
Oh, I think I saw, was that Jonathan Weedle who's saying he's here too?
Yep. Yes, Jonathan, that's right.
That's perfect. Right, so I think we can
Walter Garrison is here as well, and Jonathan.
Nice. Thank you, Ingrid. So as Ingrid said, there's a couple new faces around the table. So for those of you I've not met, I'm Michael Mandam, I'm the manager of government affairs for GTAA. And it's usually, the meeting's usually chaired by my colleague, Lori McKee, and she wasn't able to attend this evening. So I'm chairing the meeting. I saw Suzanne really quickly on the line. Suzanne Acton Gervais. So maybe you can, Suzanne, not to put you on the spot, but maybe you can introduce yourself just briefly, and for those who don't know you.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Suzanne Acton Gervais. I am currently interim president and CEO of the National Airlines Council of Canada. You are correct, Francesca has not retired, but has moved on to another organization. I've been in aviation for 35 years this year, and it's been a challenging time like never before these last 2 years. So my first time attending this, and I don't know if I'll be the one full-time moving forward, but currently at this time, I do sincerely appreciate the invitation and opportunity.
Perfect. Thank you, and really happy to have you here this evening. If we can, next item would be the approval of the agenda, which was circulated in advance of the meeting. A couple things have changed. So John Sharp is not attending this evening. Neil is here, and Ingrid mentioned that Stuart is here as well, and Robin Connolly isn't attending. So if I can, with that, can I have someone, a motion to approve the agenda? Jonathan, maybe seconded by Councillor Fonseca. And in terms of review and approval of the December 7th, 2021 minutes, can we have a motion to approve those minutes? There's a couple matters arising. I guess I should touch on those before we approve the minutes. So one was, coming out of that meeting on December 7th, we were to provide a copy of Wendy Parody's presentation to committee members, which was done. And there was a member of the public, Ivan Batty. I don't know if he's here this evening with us. Ivan, had asked requested a copy of the 5-year performance review be posted to the website and the ground lease be updated with Amendment 15. So happy to report that the updated ground lease was posted to our website and the 5-year performance review was posted to the website on January 19th. So that's been taken care of. And with that, can I have a motion to approve those minutes and someone to second? Any hands up? I saw Shane. You had your hand up previously. Perfect. I can't see all the
And
hands.
it's me, I it's me, Sabir Sayed. Sabir.
Perfect. Thanks, Sabir. Awesome. So we'll move on. We have a pretty full agenda for this evening, and I was saying before most people got on the call, I'm hopeful. We're starting to see people travel again, so that's the numbers are definitely passenger numbers are definitely uplifting. We had a really exciting announcement from the Minister of Transport. Federal Minister of Transport was in the terminal early I guess it's March 14th, and to make an announce funding announcement. So I won't steal the thunder of my colleague. So my colleague Ferres Curry is with us tonight, and he'll give you just a quick summary of the consultative committee update that we had circulated in advance of this meeting. So over to you, Ferris.
Thanks, Michael. Hello, everybody. I'm Faris Khoury, as Michael said. I hope some of you had the chance to glance at the Consultative Committee newsletter that went out last Friday. Just a couple of articles that stand out for me are the Airport Critical Infrastructure Program funding announcement. As some of you might know, and as Michael just mentioned, we welcome Minister of Transport Omar Al Ghabra to Pearson on March 14th. As he awarded the $142 million in funding to Pearson as part of the Airport Critical Infrastructure Program. That funding will go to technology transformation, airside pavement restoration, the Eglinton LRT airport segment, and biosecurity. This will definitely help us advance some of our critical projects that were put on hold given the pandemic, and it's a good first step to recovery. And this is also a good example of how governments and airports must work hand in hand to make this recovery a reality. I'd also like to mention the two awards that were given to Pearson by Airports Council International, ACI for short. One award was the Best Large Airport in North America for 2021, which makes this the fifth year in a row for Pearson regarding this award. And also the other award for the Best Hygiene Measures by region, which makes this the second year in a row for Pearson. And finally, I'd encourage you to take a look at the article titled Advocating for Infrastructure Investments at the Canada 360 Economic Summit. And that took place on February 9th, which highlights how the GTAA President and CEO, Deborah Flint, joined by other Canadian infrastructure leaders, spoke to more than 1,100 attendees at the Canada 360 Summit as they discussed the actions needed to find better ways of connecting Canadians by moving goods and people. These are the articles that stand out for me, but I do encourage everyone to take a look at all the newsletter. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Fettis. With that, I see my co a couple colleagues. So Neil Samuels with us tonight. He's the Associate Director, Operational Delivery and Readiness, and Stuart Bricknell is the Director of Engineering and Architectural Services. And they'll provide an update on the upcoming runway rehab work. So runway 06 left, 24 right. We have a pretty major rehabilitation happening on that runway. So I'll let the guys walk through the presentation. Over to you, Neil and Stuart.
Thanks, thanks, Michael. Can everyone see my screen? Is it working? No, not yet. Okay, how about now?
Yep, I can see that.
Okay, just a minor housekeeping item. My presentation screen is above me and my camera screen is below me. So if I'm not making eye contact, it's not on purpose. It's just so I apologize in advance. So thank you for allowing us the opportunity to be in front of this committee today. And Michael, thank you for the introduction for Stuart and I. And also joining us today is Andrew Bader. He's a part of our team for ops delivery and readiness. And my team really looks after the coordination of all activities at the airport. And we really optimize the balance between the construction activities and the airside operational performance and the impacts on the surrounding noise-sensitive communities. Obviously, Stuart Bricknell, our Director of Engineering Architectural Services, we've been working very closely together on this project. And it is quite the large project, a large-scale project for us. We haven't done a rehabilitation of a runway such as this in, I would say, in ever or as long as I've been at this airport, and that's for the last 25 years. So I'll get right into it. And Michael, once again, thank you for the recap and the reason why we're here and the scope. So just a little bit of background into the runway itself. It was initially constructed in the 1960s, and it coincided with the opening of the original Terminal 1, as we all remember. And it is our second busiest runway here at Toronto Pearson. And these are pre-COVID numbers, obviously, that we're going off of. And it is one of our main east-west parallels. So it's this blue highlighted runway right here. And it's adjacent to another east-west parallel, which is 6R, 2R L. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in details. And there's some pictures here from its initial opening. And you can see the outlay of the original Terminal 1 up here and then over here as well. And then the runway being constructed in 1961 up here. So that's just kind of like the background. And then we really want to get into the why we're doing this and just kind of moving along into like our reasons and the reason to rehabilitate this runway. Essentially, this being the first full rehabilitation since 1960, we've done asphalt repairs as recently as 2018. However, the concrete and the base layer has never been touched. So it's time for just within its lifespan, it's time for us to go and kind of do a full rehabilitation. Obviously, usage is a big reason, and you can I hope you can appreciate it. Look at the roadway systems around us, municipal roads and provincial roads. They all need upkeep and maintenance, and our runways are no different. Being the second busiest, it does see a fair share of aircraft traffic. So another, full reason to rehabilitate. And obviously to support the future growth. We want sustainability on this runway. And looking forward to a preferred, east-west operation to support that. So we do need that. And these are just some pictures we've taken from our recent engineering studies survey results of the runway, and you can see the asphalt cracks here. And this is really kind of highlighting the critical areas of the runway that really need to be rehabilitated. And this is pretty much, I would say, three quarters of the runway, and then the holding base and the threshold, as we call them, the ends of the runway. Continue on. I don't see any hands up. I don't have my camera screen up. Everything. Are we good to go?
Yep, we're good to go.
Okay, good. Perfect. And then kind of moving on, the how are we going to construct and do the rehabilitation? So the project is broken up into six construction phases within three key periods. So the construction will be moving in a west to east formation. And as the construction teams move along, areas will be opening up for access for taxiing aircraft to the southernmost runway, which is 6R, 2R L, which was a runway that I alluded to at the first slide. You will also see our rates within the periods listed here, and I'll get into those a little bit here. And this was a key mitigator and support lever for our preferential operation this year. Our runway capacity usually is at 90 movements an hour, and to support this and gain an optimum operational performance on our airfield, we took the decision to reduce our slots. And this is the first time ever to support construction, we reduce slots. So basically what we've done is we've done 20% reduction in the spring and the fall periods, which is April 4th to June 24th, and then September 15th to November 18th, we reduced 20% approximately. And then in the summer to 77 movements, around 14%, and that's the middle part. And really, the reasoning being is so we can allow when you see this red and the purple area, it doesn't allow access to the southernmost runway in a full mixed mode operation, as we call it. So we could either get an arrival or a departure. It depends on which side we're on. So therefore, we had to reduce the slots further in these periods. And then when we get into the center portion of the runway, we can increase the slots a little bit more, but still being conservative in our planning to protect our operation. Any questions on this? Can I keep going? Okay. Just so continuing on here. And then some of our mitigation strategies. And so in preparing for this upcoming runway work this year, GTA management reviewed and applied some of the lessons learned from our rehabilitation of runway 0523 in 2017. And obviously, there were some consequences there. So some of the key learnings that we undertook from 2017 included the need to establish a core airside construction planning team, which comprised of obviously the GTA, NAV Canada, and our two main carriers, Air Canada and WestJet. And we've been at the table with these groups since last fall, really coming up with a plan to mitigate the construction this year. As I mentioned, the slot reduction, so we've been planning to a more conservative aircraft arrival rates, which is the reduction in airports declared slot capacity. So going down from 90 to 72 in the spring and the fall. Yeah. And then 77 in the summer. Sir, is there a question? No? Okay.
No.
And then I know Michael's going to discuss this, is the early and robust communications to stakeholders and elected officials of the construction project and impacts. And then lastly, one of the big ones is a freeze on NAV Canada procedural changes that might impact flight operations. So we don't want to add complexity to the system as it's complex already. Any questions from anyone? Stuart, anything to add from an engineering perspective?
No, I think you covered everything there, Neil, unless there's some specific questions.
I see a question from Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much, Neil, for this presentation. So if I understand correctly, the mitigating impacts here, these are based on the key lessons learned from 2017. This is not what was done in 2017, correct? This has already been, so there has been engagement with NAV Canada and Air Canada, WestJet, so some of the major carriers. I have a question for you. For the runway, you probably said, and I apologize for missing it, will the runway be done in sections, or will it be, and then, you know, be usable at some point, or will it be completely ripped up at once and it was done
So we're going in a west to east formation, so these are sections that are kind of divided up. So you see that we start in the holding bay and the threshold of six left. Okay. And this section will be complete, so what it'll allow is for aircraft to taxi from here onto this runway. Okay. So it'll go in sections and all the way right to the end. There are some sections that are going to be doubled up, but it will be done in sections, yes.
Thank you. I'll put my hand down.
Thanks. No problem.
I see a question from Sabir.
Hi, Sabir.
Yes, Sam, I may have missed it. I think there are five operational runways, am I right?
Sorry?
There are five operational runways. So this will be the sixth one?
No, this is one of our fifth ones. We're just doing a complete rehabilitation. So we're just redoing the runway, reconstructing it.
Basically. So this is not the new one then?
No, the latest runway that we have is 6R24L, which was opened in 2002, which is adjacent to this runway right here. And I can go back to the first slide here. Oops. So these are our five runways. We're not building a new runway, just to kind of confirm. We're rehabilitating our existing runway.
And so this is the fourth one that you are rehabilitating.
Well, it's one of five, yes. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, sorry, I may have missed that. Thank you.
It's okay.
No problem. I see Stephen has his hand up.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, how are you? Thank you very much. I'm just wondering who is going to be performing this work and if the contract's been tendered yet.
Stuart, will you take that one, if that's okay?
Yes, so the contract has been tendered. We are going to be working with Dufferin Construction on this one.
Okay.
With that being said, we are going through for approval from our board Thursday. So 2 days from now, that will be official.
Okay. Dufferin Construction. All right. And do you have any idea what the metrics are for how many person hours are involved in this rehabilitation project? Or is that not yet been calculated?
That has been calculated. That's a good question. Can I get back to you in a couple of seconds? I just have to find it.
No problem. Thanks a lot. You can go on to the next question if it's easier.
I don't see any other. I think that's it for the questions for now, but Stuart can come back with whatever he's able to track down there.
Yeah, sorry, I don't have the numbers right on top of my head. I'll find it for you in a couple of seconds, okay, Stephen?
No problem. Thank you.
Michael, did you want to take the next slide?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I can pick up here. So obviously, you know, a project of this size and magnitude, our intention, we have every intention of going out and communicating with elected officials, with the communities around the airport proactively. So, and I think we've already started to do that in what I would call a very robust way. You want to keep people up to date on project scope, timelines, potential impacts, and what we're doing to mitigate any impacts. So we can move to the next slide, and it talks about some of the strategies we're using to communicate with external stakeholders. I don't know if you, Neil, are you able to advance the slide? There you go,
Michael.
So you can, yeah, absolutely. So what we've done is we've established a dedicated runway rehab webpage. That's probably where the most timely updates will be posted in terms of the project, the various phases that we're in, the anticipated impact. So I'd encourage everyone to check there for the most up-to-date information. We've run, there'll be two runs of front page ads in local Metroland newspapers. So one of those ads has already run, and there's another one running in the coming week. I believe we've dropped postcards at 50,000 residences, made automated phone calls. We have a social media campaign that's planned. You can see our checking in newsletter that goes to 11,500 people. And just this morning, we had a similar briefing with elected officials, just giving them advance notice about the project and advance notice, because we'll hold a similar briefing with the what we call the neighborhood table. So neighborhood tables essentially engaged residents associations that are engaged on airport operations issues. So that meeting will take place tomorrow night. So a lot underway just to get out, set, manage expectations, and let people know what's coming. And of course, provide and hear from the community and elected officials about any feedback they may have. And this will go on throughout the duration of the project. I don't know, Neil, if there's another slide.
No, I think that's it, Michael. This is the last
one. Glad people asked questions along the way. I don't know if anyone has any final questions for, yep, Suzanne.
I do. Thank you for your patience and thank you for the presentation. Question back to Neil, please. I actually have three, if that's okay. Pardon me?
Sorry, I was just going to say it's like a doctor's office. It's not like a doctor's office. Don't worry.
Time's up. And again, you may have mentioned this, and just as they're coming up in my mind, is there any construction that's being slotted to occur overnight in order to minimize the day traffic impacts?
So, Stuart, I'll let you handle that, but I'll we are looking at all hours. So we are looking at expediting this as much as possible. So, we are looking at all hours, just to answer your question.
Okay, Stuart, and I have a couple more questions. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, I can answer right away. So initially we're looking at working day hours just because of availability of manpower. So it's just in terms of being able to then to do what we need to do. But we're also looking at options if we see issues around weather and or we discover anything under the ground that is takes a little longer to take care of. We will go into the evening and or go into weekends.
Yeah, because that's exactly right. With summer, right, we have weather, we have a red alert season, right? So, and then a couple more questions just pertaining to safety. If for this runway construction resurfacing, is there any, are you looking at grooving or is there RESAs included in this or is it, anyways, I'll just stop there and happy to take that one offline if you like.
Oh, no. Well, for RESAs, we are our lengths. We have the our runways are all set to have those distances. So I believe they're 150 meters. I could be incorrect on that, but they are already incorporated into the ending of the runway. So we don't have any concerns. We don't need to actually put in one of the actual RESAs, like the RESAs there in terms of their length, not in terms of an actual structure that we did look those in the past. In terms of grooving, we are not moving forward with grooving at this point in time, but we're also looking into it. Because if we're grooving, you have to look at doing it a minimum 30 days after construction, and typically you want to do it a year later. So we're looking at it for the possibly the next year, but it can't happen in this season because it wouldn't be enough time between laying of the asphalt and the actual grooving of the surface.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, I see another hand up there. Or maybe that's Suzanne's hand. Any other questions for Neil or Stuart? I think the key message here, and we reiterated on the call this morning with elected officials, was just the temporary nature of the work. And it is temporary. We will hear from the community in and around the airport as the work is underway. But it's just a focus on work needs to happen for safety, to maintain the operational integrity of the airport, and it will be temporary. So happy to act as a resource and a point of contact if you are hearing from elected officials or from residents as we go through it. And hopefully you can help us spread the word about where to get up-to-date information. It's on that project website. So maybe we can circulate that to committee members with the presentation, Neil and Stuart's presentation.
Sure. Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. And Stuart, you know, I don't know if you had an answer for Steve.
But I do not yet. I'm working on it still. I don't know if you could see me frantically typing in my computer.
Yeah.
I will provide it as into either a comment in here or I'll jump back in a few minutes if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't think we published a number just yet. I know we've talked about jobs and we've talked about some of the anticipated economic impact. But in terms of the hours, you're asking about the number of hours that the project will take, essentially. Is that the question?
Yeah, we don't really talk jobs anymore. We talk about person hours. So that's, I'm just curious for a number of reasons, because that's one way to get Gail the scope of the job. Mm-hmm. And it would lead to my follow-up question, which I was going to take offline, but it's, is there a community benefits agreement negotiated with this project or anything related to it?
Yeah, maybe it's a conversation, like you said, better happens offline. And I know there's modeling, you know, there's different, from what I've seen, there's different modeling when you think about the duration of the project and the hours that go into it and the economic impact assessment. So maybe we can talk about that offline. And I don't know if the community benefits agreement, if that's something that would be discussed with the mm-hmm. with the contractor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that fair to say, Stuart?
Sorry, yes. Sorry. I was having trouble getting off mute there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Stuart, if you want to send me those hours, I can include it in the email with the presentation to the members after the meeting.
Okay, perfect. So I'm just reaching out to the contractor now because I had seen something. I just want to make sure it's somewhat accurate because obviously it's going to vary depending on the actual construction. But I will find something and provide it to you, Ingrid.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Did you want us to stay, Michael, or are we?
No need. If you'd like to, of course you can. Always happy to have you here. But really appreciate you guys taking the time.
Okay. I'm going to
drop off.
Yeah.
Thank you.
As well. If you need me, just dial me in.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Great to meet everyone. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Next up, we have my colleague of mine, Ruba Al-Nazar. She's the manager of community investment at the GTA, and she's undertaking what I would call a really exciting piece of work. Hopefully you feel that way after your presentation, but she's going to give a presentation about an airport workforce strategy and playbook, and so over to Ruba.
Thanks, Michael. Just wanted to check if everyone can see my screen properly. Hopefully without my speaking notes, because very, very extensive.
Can't see any speaking notes.
Awesome. All right. So thank you for having me today. Hello, everyone. And thanks, Michael, for hosting us and for the opportunities that we can present to you. Like you said, what I think and what we believe is an excellent piece of work that we have collaborated on with the Toronto Region Board of Trade starting in 2021. But to start us off, it's good to also do some context setting around the vision we call Pearson Works, our initiative Pearson Works, and then tie it all up. I believe we did give a presentation around Pearson Works in early 2020, perhaps to the consultative committee, and that's pre-pandemic, to brief you around the vision for this cross-stakeholder collaborative platform, Pearson Works. Now, stemming from the workforce demographic survey we did in 2019 and following a best practice research around what airports around the world are doing to support their workforce, we started building this vision. It is meant to leverage and solidify Pearson as an economic pillar and promote the benefits of airport careers so we can have easier pathways to talent acquisition and retention. Of course, Pearson Works is meant to guide us so that we can prepare for future workforce needs. It is vital for both employers and the workers at the airport as it enhances the experience of both parties through targeted programming and collaboration that can help employers reduce the cost of business and help employees also increase productivity and have clear pathways to guide their journeys, their work journeys at Toronto Pearson. Now, after we started mapping out the phases and work, COVID hit in March 2020, and it became imperative that we immediately act. So working with the wonderful people at Talk, and Stephen is here to corroborate that, we built this five-phase plan. And as you know, the impact on the workforce and operation was swift and it was significant. So we started with, phase one, we started with addressing immediate needs. We created a resource page on the website to offer immediate support for impacted workers. Then we moved to offering programming and supports for the workers around job seeking and reskilling. We did that through collaborations with a number of our community partner organizations that operate in the employment services sector. The third phase, which we are wrapping up, is around having a better understanding of what skills, what career opportunities, as well as challenges our workers face, plus conducting research on the impact of COVID, the recent changes and what we need actually to make adjustments to better our workforce. Now in the future, hopefully near future, we hope to move to phases 4 and 5 so we can start to introduce additional trainings and opportunities so that we can work collaboratively and collectively with employers, with key actors in the airport to move this vision forward, leading us to create an airport-wide community space and job portal that would support both the workers and the employers at the airport. Now, just to give a little bit of more background, but on the Propeller Project, which is our community investment partner program, and the work that we did with the Toronto Region Board of Trades. The Propeller Project is really the name that we call the community investment program at the GTAA. And we have two funding streams. One is called Uplift and the other is called Nest. And through those two funding streams, we support building healthier, happier communities in the areas surrounding the airport. Now, our Uplift Fund has been investing and partnering in programming, advocacy, and research to support local area residents so they can gain the skills, the connections, the opportunities needed, so they can be meaningfully employed since 2018. That work has started on that specific strategic direction. It mainly focuses on addressing the complex issue of underemployment. Now, underemployment can be simply defined as when people in, let's say, a labor force are employed at less than full-time or regular jobs, or at jobs that are inadequate with respect to their training or economic needs. And it is, in fact, very different than unemployment.
So in 2019, we collaborated with Deloitte on a white paper so we can better understand the causes and consequences of underemployment and bring out recommendations on how to tackle that issue. Now, following that call, release of that white paper, we issued a call for proposals for $1 million based on the recommendations that came out. Again, that was pre-COVID 2019. And at the time, we received over 70 applications and chose 7 out of them. One of them was from the Toronto Region Board of Trade for their Economic Blueprint Institute. Now, the EBI is the research arm for the Toronto Region Board of Trade, and we awarded them a 3-year sponsorship so they can develop a data-driven roadmap that would explore opportunities related to planning of land use, infrastructure, innovation, and talent for the airport employment zone. Now, due to COVID and the severe impact that it had on the region and sector, we found it would be optimal so that we can shift the work a little bit to address our own workforce recovery. And hence, from that, came the proposal from EBI to work on a Toronto Pearson workforce recovery strategy and playbook. We wanted a strategy that is beyond research only, something that identifies opportunities and could give us a roadmap for the future. What we wanted this work to do was to inform the design and implementation of very specific workforce solutions that will support both the upskilling and economic mobility of workers at the airport. And also, we wanted it to prepare people for jobs that will be created as a result of the pandemic and all the changing workforce needs. What we were hoping to get from that research was clear recommendations in the short, medium, and long term that will eventually enable us to close talent gaps, provide training opportunities that are needed and wanted and are both effective and practical. Also help us get back to our position as an employment megazone and solidify Pearson as an economic pillar in the region. It will also help us figure out how much of this can be done through reskilling the already existing workforce. Now, for the approach of this research paper, we had a mixed method. We started with a literature review and best practice research, including the demographic survey, and we conducted interviews with GTAA subject matter experts, with unions and union reps, and the Toronto Airport Workers Council. Some of our key employers and some employee focus groups were also held. Now, it is very important to note that this is not intended to be a comprehensive overview of all the employers and all the jobs at the airport. We focused on entry-level occupations that would represent a decent number of workers at the airport and the jobs that usually face significant hiring and retention challenges and are more likely to be cases of underemployment. We anticipate the playbook to be released in the coming couple of weeks. We know that it has 6 high-level recommendations, and it identifies some opportunities or actions under each recommendation. And we look forward to sharing the final report with all of you so you can read them in detail. But the 6 recommendations are, the first one is to invest in partnerships and shared leadership and backbone support. And that means simply bring the employers, the GTAA, and workers together so that we can lead this work collaboratively. The second one is to build connections and opportunities through airport-wide programs. We already have some excellent airport-wide programs at the airport. I'm Toronto Pearson is one of them. This recommendation is to expand and support such existing work. The third one is to promote and enable airport pathways to employment and career advancement by building talent pipelines or an airport-wide job portal. Then investing in skills development for everyone. And that means better access to training and make sure that we align these trainings with the needs and of our workers and our airport priorities. Number 5 would be enabling a supportive environment for workers. And that is around creating a better work experience for our employees, whether it is enhancing wait times for various services to better transit to, from, and within the airport. And finally, advancing a good jobs agenda to work on contract procurement standards that ensure better jobs, providing extra benefits or discounts or travel perks for workers across the airport. Now, this slide concludes what was in the study, but on the next slide, I'll be talking about things that we hope to do. But if anyone has any questions so far, I'm happy to answer before I move on to the next slide. Samir.
Yeah, Aruba, I think excellent presentation, and I'm glad you're doing this study. I think this is very much needed. From our region of Peel, and I know our councillor Fonseca is here as well, we have one employment zone where we have made sure that we want to diversify employment in Peel. And our council's position is that we want to encourage employment, and we also want to make sure that people live and work in the same community. So that helps our transportation as well. So I'll send you some of the details that we have to provide a Peel Enterprise Zone. And as our council's position is to diversify employment, so we are not only looking for some of the logistics type of land uses that we have in region of Peel, but also we want to make sure that we are promoting more health, high tech, and prestige type of land uses as well. So that's the diversified land uses that we are trying to encourage from our council perspective. Also, Aruba, I think it may be really nice if you can also examine and explore some of the opportunities, such as developing the free trade zone or some other employment opportunities where our residents and businesses can explore more avenues. And I think this particular part, which is the second largest employment center in entire Canada, is very, very important, I know, to our city of Mississauga and region of Peel. So we want to make sure that even this particular area can prosper more. And if there's anything that we can do to integrate further land use planning and encourage employment, that would be very much appreciated. Councillor Fonseca, if you want to add anything else as well.
I'll just briefly say, Sevier, you said it very well. It was excellent. I think also, so not only in the region of Peel, but also locally. So for the city of Mississauga, city of Brampton, and town of Caledon, they too have passed motions in terms of with regards to land use planning, but also from an employment opportunity standpoint as well, that parallel or complement what council has passed at the region of Peel. So perhaps I can forward off the local motions that have been passed by councils at the local tier. But you said it very well. And with this being such a large employment zone, it's really important to diversify not only the employment opportunities, but the land use planning as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. And Sevier, just to shed some light on one thing. For instance, the Community Investment Program, our Uplift Fund, is our funding is actually specific for the area that is around the airport, that is Brampton, Mississauga, and Etobicoke. And this is where our funding and sponsorship for employment services programs and training are focused for the areas, for the residents of the these areas, to ensure that, yes, we would like more people who work at the airport to actually be living near the airport, because that is better for the economy, for transit and all of that. So we already have that lens when it comes to our funding or support for the community investment part. When it comes to this particular piece of work as well, it has a bigger focus on employment for sure. But once you see the entire report, you will see that it sheds a light on the employment zone and the ecosystem that surrounds the airport as well, and the importance and how it of it and how it all ties back to each other. And I think you will find that you'll find it informative, but it's also a piece to leverage in the future in conversations. And I'd be more than happy, please send me any documents that you have, so we can also try and incorporate that moving forward. Okay. But also ties. Yes.
Sorry, one follow-up question. Have you explored that foreign free trade zone? Because I think that may be one of the incentives to attract more businesses in this area. Have you explored that as well?
This is really all about workforce, the recovery for the workforce and the strategies specific to the airport. It wasn't around the airport employment zone necessarily. So this is why it was the research that was done. It was for the employers and employees at the airport, and the interviews were done around that. Counselor? Counselor, I think your hand is up.
Yes. Sorry about that. So I actually wanted to add just two things or comment on two points. With regards to, it's great to see in the presentation the importance and the priority put on accessible childcare services. I think also we've also heard through the region of Peel, through council, and then again, locally at local council, and I can speak for at Mississauga council, is the importance of not only opportunities around accessible childcare services, but also accessibility opportunities as well for employment. So we have an accessibility both at the region and at the city, an accessibility advisory committee. Just wherever possible in this strategy, again, with this being such a large employment zone, wherever possible to add in opportunities to support and encourage employment for those with varying abilities is extremely important. We've heard that as well. So obviously diversifying the workforce is really important, and including opportunities for those with different abilities is also very important. So I just wanted to emphasize that as well, because what just popped out was the accessible childcare services, which I think is really important as well. So I'm glad that that is highlighted in the presentation. So thank you.
Thank you. I would have gone to that at the end, but we will be drafting our response for this report. At the end of the day, this was commissioned or done by the Economic Blueprint Institute, and the GTAA has to respond towards the recommendations that are there and saying, all right, you know, how will we act and what we will be acting on? And the point you've raised is definitely something that we're taking into consideration and we'll be including. There's a lot of conversations and emphasis on diversity and inclusion in all its forms and levels. So definitely it will make it as part of that. Okay. If there are no more questions, I'll move to the next slide. So yeah, but after the presentation, just to give you a little bit of an update around how we're hoping to do this work. Well, last October, we applied for the Skills Development Fund from the Ministry of Labor, Trades and Skills Development. The application was to support us moving into the first, the next phases of Pearson Works. At the very first slide, we had five phases. So we want to continue with phases 4 and 5 that I spoke about earlier. Now, successful application would mean that there's an opportunity that we can implement some of the work that intersects between our vision and the recommendations in the playbook, actually. So we had applied to support for support to create an airport-wide job portal that will be open for both job seekers and current employees at the airport, and for training opportunities to enhance the offerings of Pearson Works for upskilling, and also to create an airport jobs council. And from the previous slides, you could see that there are many similarities between what we had requested to support requested support to implement and what this playbook actually identifies as what we need to do, and hence this Venn diagram. Now, many recommendations from the report can be actioned through that SDF funding if we get it, and we will keep you apprised on the outcome of our application in the future. But just so you know, we have identified what needs to be done. We know we have a plan moving forward, and hopefully we'll be able to action that through some government funding. Actually, that was my last slide. So now, if there are any other questions. There's one hand. Counselor.
Right.
No.
I think she's taking her hand down. It was from the previous question.
Sorry about that. I forgot to lower my hand.
No problem.
No problem.
Jonathan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just have to figure out how to stop sharing my screen. Oh, stop presenting. There.
Yeah. So really good presentation. And towards the end, you talked about, you know, implementing a job board. And I have something in my update, but I thought it was interesting, the perspective you shared in terms of that job board that serves two audiences. And I think that's so important, because sometimes we are locked into just the one side, either a demand side, you know, the companies looking for people, or the supply side, people looking for jobs. And I think having a kind of a job board that tries to address both, I think is an important step. So kudos as you described it there.
Thank you, Jonathan. The idea behind this is the job portal is that we also realize that many employees at Toronto Pearson either are always, they don't want to leave the airport. They love the airport. They want to stay here. They just want maybe a slightly better job or more hours somewhere, or they're looking for opportunities, and there are plenty of opportunities there. But then it's just, it's not meant to just be something that leads you to jobs. It's also meant, if you're an airport employee, it should also mean you have access to certain training opportunities that will be offered to you because you're an airport employee, or you'd have access to because you're an airport employee as well. But also, if you're someone living anywhere or not having a job at the airport and you want to see what one of our employers has, or what jobs are available at the airport, ideally, you would be able to create an account, find those jobs, apply for them through that platform.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. Good. Thanks for that.
Thank you. Michael?
Perfect. Thank you, Ruba. Much appreciated. Great presentation.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stick around, but you can also jet. It's no problem. I think the next part of the meeting is the roundtable portion of the meeting. So we typically go around the table and members of the committee provide updates about what is going on with your individual organization. So I see Jonathan on my screen. Why don't we start with you?
Sure. Thanks, Michael. So it's we do have a few things on the go here at the region. I will be brief. I'll just highlight a few of them that. Since I missed the meeting in December, I think playing a little catch up. So first thing, in December, the region invested $1.5 million into Venture Lab, and that's in support of an initiative called the Hardware Catalyst Initiative, which is a program launched by Venture Lab that is focused on hardware companies, semiconductor related companies, and it just happened to align with the shortages in semiconductors that have been in the airwaves over the last couple of years. This initiative was struck by Venture Lab in 2019, at the end of 2019, so just prior to the pandemic, was funded in 2020 to the tune of over two years, about $10 million by FedDev Ontario, and York Region has added $1.5 million to that to really attract other international semiconductor-related companies. So that's an exciting announcement from the region. Second thing, and they're looking to target about 145 new jobs coming out of this program, so that's really, really exciting. Another thing that is recent is we are promoting the auto tech sector in York Region. And so we did a study recently which really highlights the strength of the other tech cluster in the region. And we just did our first promotional piece through Site Selection magazine. So, of course, we're looking for that foreign direct investment. So the airport is how they're going to get here. So it really ties in with the GTAA. So that's something that's near and dear to us. Thirdly, we will be, hopefully things continue to improve, at Collision 2022. The Collision has announced that they will be in Toronto in person this year in June. So we're looking forward to that. And that continues to be a major opportunity for tech-oriented talent attraction and, you know, investment attraction from a entrepreneurial perspective. So that is something that we're interested in and we'll be participating there. And just as the final update from York Region's perspective, tying into what we just heard about that workforce strategy study that your team has done, we have implemented a job board or a job portal within our YorkLink Economic Development website. And we did that in collaboration with the Workforce Planning Board of York Region. And that is really meant to be looking at things or benefiting both sides that I mentioned, the business side as well as the potential employees. And it has some tools built in, a really good platform that the Workforce Planning Board developed, and we were able to implement and put in our website. So that's a mouthful, but four things I wanted to share, and I'll share the link on that.
Perfect. Thanks for sharing. A lot of fantastic stuff happening, obviously, in York Region, and hopeful to see, we talk about Collision, you know, coming back and being in person, that's a hopeful sign. So I see Eileen in the bottom corner of my screen. So over to you.
Thank you. And good afternoon, everyone. I've got a couple of events, and the event schedule at the Toronto Board of Trade is really heating up, and a lot of in-person event opportunities as well. But I've selected just a couple that I think would be most relevant to this group. The first is tomorrow, part of the Power Breakfast series, Greening the Grid on Ontario's Net Zero Mix, taking place at 9:30 tomorrow morning. On March 25th at 8:30, there will be an in-person event with Minister Ng and an MP from the UK on Canada and the UK leading the world on modern and inclusive trade. Following on from the presentation that we heard just a little earlier, there will be a workforce summit on closing the talent gap taking place on March 29th. That's a full day event from 9 till 4:30. And finally, March 31st, there is a workshop on artificial intelligence. I guess that's a little bit more forward looking, but the new frontier for scenario planning. And that's at midday on March 31st. So I thought I would just highlight some of those events, but a lot of good stuff coming up at the Toronto Board of Trade.
Perfect. Thanks so much. And Ruben, I will see you at the Talent Gap event. We'll both be there. So over to, I'm just going to go down my screen on the right-hand side here. So Badar, if you can hear me, over to you.
Yeah, I can hear.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. Fantastic updates so far. In Brent, and things have been quite exciting over the last little while, despite the COVID-related challenges. Our business community members, and especially members of Brampton Board of Trade, have been active in complementing the economic recovery. As most of you know, Brampton has been promoting a very bold vision of our downtown core, re-envisioning and rebuilding it as an innovation district. That conversation continues full-fledged with the number of incubators and innovation centers now hosted right in downtown Brampton. With those incubators and innovation centers now being in downtown, Ryerson Venture Zone, Beehive, to act as a soft landing spot for international businesses, we have been seeing a lot of investment in our downtown core from real estate development developers. When you look at downtown Brampton and the 5-kilometer radius of downtown Brampton, I think in the next 10 years, you guys will be very pleasantly surprised with what's shaping up in downtown Brampton, which is great news also for our heritage places in downtown Brampton, as well as the business community at large. In addition to that, I'm sure everybody has heard the exciting news that anchored by MDA Robotics in Brampton, Brampton has now launched a space research cluster. We're all very excited in Brampton about this. You know, the flight to moon at one point in time was the big step for humanity. And these days, from Dubai to China to India, everybody has been launching flights to Mars. And I think to think that, you know, a Brampton company, MDA, has played an active role in the past in providing the robotic solutions to space industry, aerospace industry, is now basically being used as an anchor to attract more aerospace related businesses and perhaps build upon the existing NASA programs for exploring spaces is really exciting stuff. So Brampton Board of Trade continues to advocate for more resources from all three levels of the government in a coordinated fashion to help us retain and grow our talent pool to meet the demands of all of that exciting development that's taking place in Brampton. And we are also now actively promoting this year's Business Excellence Awards, which will be held on the evening of May 5th. Shameless plug-in, our firm Generation has been nominated by a fellow Brampton Board of Trade member for our advocacy-related work for global trade impact. You know, if you guys have some time on May 5th and you can join us for a celebration of business excellence in Brampton, we would be delighted to have you there.
Congrats, Badar. And I don't think the truth isn't shameless, so it's all good. Are you volunteering for a flight to space then?
No, I think there are other people ahead of me who will be keen on doing that. But honestly, I think I would suggest to this committee that if members of this committee are interested in sometime visiting the MDA offices in Brampton, I'm more than happy to arrange a visit. Because if you haven't been to the MDA offices and if you haven't seen the technologies that they have been developing for the last 30 odd years, honestly, it is, you know, Mayor Brown in Brampton jokes. He says, instead of saying Houston, you know, we're ready for liftoff, it's going to be Brampton, we're ready for liftoff. But honestly, you gotta come and actually take a look at what's shaping up in the space exploration side of things in Brampton.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fantastic idea, especially as we start thinking about gathering again in person. And so we'll definitely keep that in mind. Next on my screen, I see Alessandra Bianchi. I hope I'm pronouncing that okay.
Hi, everyone. Yep, you're pronouncing that.
Okay.
A small update from the Ministry of Transportation. So since February 2021, Transport Canada has convened all the provinces and territories to document and assess the state of air transportation sector and the state of its recovery coming out of the pandemic. And part of the objectives for this group was to identify for the federal government and both the provincial and territorial governments the conditions necessary for the successful, safe recovery of air travel in Canada. And so a communique and summary of findings can now be found on the Council of Ministers Responsible for Transportation and Highway Safety website, or COMT.ca. And the top findings from the group on the conditions necessary for recovery include the need for continued collaboration between the federal, provincial, and territorial governments to identify the need for future interventions and providing timely communication, monitor the pace of recovery, and provide consistent communications on health and safety measures related to both domestic and international air transportation.
Perfect. Thanks so much for that update, Alessandra.
No problem.
I see Councillor Bradford is next on my screen. I don't know if the counselor can hear me. We'll give him one second, and then Councillor Fonseca, you're next. So over to you.
Okay, sure. Good afternoon, everyone. First off, just want to say a big congratulations on the announcement that was made and the investment in the airport.
Also, a thank you with regards to attended the webinar this morning and the update on that was presented today on the construction, which is obviously needed. And I just want to say, having gone through the last round of construction and dealing with the different resident groups that live in and around the airport, I just want to say a big thank you to how you've committed to the communication and making sure everybody's aware of what's going on far out of the actual project, and how you've parceled it into the different construction phases, and continuing to provide, it's a multi-pronged approach as to how you're providing all of us updates. I greatly appreciate that as an elected official on the ground in the community. So thank you to that. I also did want to say the City of Mississauga, we are moving forward with a very assertive transportation plan, and that includes active transportation. And I know that our mayor has been out with a number of announcements and looking to collaborate in any way possible when it comes to transportation in and out of the airport, taking a regional approach to transportation to get people commuting to their jobs at the airport, in and around the airport, as well as those that are going to be flying. So patrons is really important. And that includes obviously transportation by bus. It includes transportation by light, LRT, and then also by bike. And the airport has always been a good big supporter of the City of Mississauga's community rides, our cycling committee is this year going back to implementing in-person rides rather than virtual rides. So I hope that the airport, I invite the airport to come out to those rides, and thank you for all of your support around that. And just a couple of other things around innovation and employment and business. We have launched, the City of Mississauga has launched an idea, Mississauga.ca, which is Mississauga Innovation District, starting specifically in the downtown core, but also working with the number of BIAs as well. With a lot of pretty amazing strategies to recruit, retain, and advance talent, not only in the City of Mississauga, but collaborating and working with business and employment areas in and around the city. And that also, we are involved in an equity diversity collaborative, again, to promote, recruit, retain, advance, support all members of the community, including Indigenous women, youth, and the list goes on and on and on. So those are just a few updates. And again, a big congratulations on moving forward and into a recovery for the airport. I think it's so important. So thanks
so much. Thanks very much. That's a lot of fantastic updates, and particularly I'll take the feedback back to the team about the runway rehab work and the webinar this morning, and looking forward to supporting you in outreach and your communications with constituents, and on the active transportation side as well. I know the Eglinton Crosstown connection to the airport has shown up in the city's budget submissions, and we've been talking for a long time about better BRT connections to the airport. So absolutely. Great updates. Over to Amanda Chum.
Hi, everyone. Just kind of echoing Councillor Fonseca's comments, just congratulating you on behalf of the Transport Canada with the recent announcement. Looking forward to seeing how GTA recovers and as we continue to move into this next phase of this hopefully a post-pandemic life, or as we learn to live with our new phase. Other than that, nothing else for me.
All right, we'll take it. Congratulations. Thank you. Sabir. Did Sabir, maybe we lost. No, there he is.
Sorry, I was just trying to find my mouse. Okay. Yeah, so I think I've got two updates. We recently had a really good workshop for the Peel Goods Movement Task Force. And as per our council's direction, we had specifically focused this workshop on truck parking. And we had fantastic presentations from various our partners. So we had a presentation from Town of Caledon, from City of Brampton, as well as we had a presentation from Ontario Trucking Association, from Smart Fleet Center, and other private sector members. And the truck parking is a very complex issue. It touches planning, enforcement, as well as operations. And I must say that there are not many municipalities who have tried to address this issue for the truck parking. And this has been a little bit a big problem at this time because of the pandemic and many other things that are going on because of the increased goods movement activity. So we did hear from planning, from enforcement, and from operations folks, and we will be preparing a short summary of the outcome for the truck parking. So if any of the organizations have any important input, please do let us know. The second thing, at the Region of Peel, we will be conducting a comprehensive transperson master plan. So we'll be building upon the master plan that has been undertaken by City of Mississauga, City of Brampton, as well as now Town of Caledon. And we want to make sure that we are meeting our needs for 2051. So those are the two updates from me, Michael.
Perfect. Thank you, Sabir. Over to Suzanne. Hopefully, Suzanne, again, welcome to the committee. I know it's your first meeting, and hopefully we've given you a flavor of what the committee meetings are all about. So really pleased to have you here today. Any updates from your association?
Well, from our side, we were very pleased to see the announcement last week that we'll be removing the pre-departure testing as of April 1st. So what we've heard originally February 28th, we saw the addition of rapid antigen tests to be able to was added to the pre-departure entry suite, if you will. It used to be a PCR test, which was very complex, costly for business travelers and for families traveling. So we very much welcome the announcement for April 1st for the dropping of pre-departure testing. But we all know that this probably does not go far enough. This is very, very welcome. But from what we understand, this is still a transition, and there will very likely be other measures that will be dropped towards the end of April. So they do follow what is called an order in council from the PHAC, and those from the Transport Canada side, interim orders are drafted in order to promulgate into regulation. So from our side, I think that's the biggest news from our side, updates. We're very much still chasing COVID. We're still very much looking, you know, like the airport community at recovery for the travel and tourism sector, not only for leisure travel, but of course, welcoming back business travel. So we do think that this will definitely encourage some return to discovering this beautiful country, and also for business travel, not only here in Canada, but will enable some confidence in employers in allowing their staff to go abroad and reassure that they'll be able to return home on the scheduled timeline. So I think that's the biggest news for us right now. We're still very much in the recovery and looking to work with the Government of Canada to bring it, you know, to rebound and to make sure that we're not looking over our next shoulder for the next variant, if you will. So still lots to be done, but very happy with the announcement of last week and welcoming it for April 1st.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, definitely some positive momentum that we can see in the relaxing of travel restrictions. So good news there. We just need to continue it, hopefully, and COVID stays on the right trajectory.
Yeah, and from the concept, from the perspective of aviation, we do know that a lot of decisions, you know, when it comes to public health, obviously they're very local. The reality is aviation is global. So it also has to sit not only from the local decision, but it has to make sense in global. So we don't want to be a country left behind, if you will, in a competitive aspect. So thank you.
No, I think it's something, if we've anyone, I think everyone on the call has traveled out of Pearson and recognizes the interconnectedness of the airport, and that was our competitive advantage, definitely pre-COVID, in terms of that direct global connectivity. So we often say, as Pearson goes, so goes the system. So there's no question, it's a global market, right, and environment. So great point. I skipped Ingrid, reminded me, I skipped Savick. So over to you, Savick.
I'm still here. I have plugged through. So a couple of things, not a lot for me today. I just wrote a note here. Biggest thing for us at the college is that graduation is coming up this spring. We have quite a few entries, both in the flight program and the diploma. So we probably have over 100 coming out of the diploma and probably about 25 coming out of the flight program. With respect to jobs, many of the grads are actually getting some jobs within some of the carriers that are starting to hire up again, and especially things like Flair, Lynx, Porter, obviously. And then we're having a lot of interchange between current jobs to new jobs. Some people are going from a Porter to Air Canada or to a cargo jet, WestJet, that type of stuff. So we're seeing some movement. And even I gave a recommendation for a young man yesterday to move to Metrolinx at a very senior position from the airline side to Metrolinx. So we're seeing a little bit of change that way, right? Where you get the transferability of skills from risk management and fatigue management in the airline side. You're seeing that moving into other modes of transport, which is quite good. So, and other than that, it's we're just plugging away at our usual jobs, right? In terms of keeping the business, we've got a new leader in our program, the aviation program, a young lady by the name, well, not a young lady, a very senior lady by the name of Sarah Ailis. So she's running the program now, a business person versus an aviation person. So we'll see where that leads us. I've always enjoyed participating with the GAA and the committees and just staying engaged. So we shall continue on.
Perfect. Thanks, Savick. I see a couple people have popped up on my screen, so I'll go to Stephen Tufts first. Oh, he disappeared.
There you go. Hi, thank you, Michael. Yeah, I'll just try to be as fast as I can. Again, the workers at Pearson and TAWC are very happy to see recovery continue and passenger traffic pick up. For many of our unionized workplaces, recall is almost complete. So that's actually quite a good news. We still see in a few places, it's anecdotal, where there's been long-term adjustment, which means folks that were laid off at COVID have simply left the sector and gone to work somewhere else. And that creates labor shortage issues that will have to be addressed over the medium term anyway, as folks eventually come back to the aviation sector as a secure form of employment. We too were, you know, somewhat excited about the ACIP announcement last week. It's nice to see that the rehabilitation project moving forward, that the transit hub at Pearson hasn't been totally forgotten. We also have some questions about the installation and financing of new check-in and boarding systems that are likely to be touchless, which means personless, which means jobs lost. And so we'll be keeping our eye on those investments to see how they work out. And I guess the third thing that I'll talk about is we are a little bit cautiously optimistic, and some folks quite excited about the confidence and supply arrangement made between the NDP and the Liberals yesterday or today, depending on your announcement. Particularly, we're excited about two labor initiatives that are supposed to become into play within the next 24 months. In the short term, the implementation of 10 paid sick days for all federal workers, which is really important in terms of pandemic management, because you don't want people coming into work sick. And the second thing, which is, I think, is really something we've been calling for a long time, is that in the event of a strike in federally regulated sectors, that replacement workers will not be allowed. So a no scab legislation at the federal level, which should hopefully come into place by sometime in 2023. So these are things that we're keeping our eye on, and we look forward to working with Ruba and others on really trying to get the better matches for workers at Pearson. I agree with Councillor Fonseca. There are groups at risk or have different skills that need employment. But sometimes you create jobs for those folks by taking folks who are in those jobs and moving them elsewhere that they're more suited to do. So it's sometimes, it's a two or three bumper move process to get people juggling into a labor market to get more people into the aviation sector. And I'm hoping that there are opportunities for folks as the recovery continues. So thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks, Stephen. Really thoughtful comments. And I know on the ACIP funding and kiosks, I know you're in touch with Ruba and Robin's group pretty frequently. So
yeah,
can work it out. What happens in practice, I guess, when that funding rolls out. Trevor, over to you.
Thanks so much, Michael. And like everyone, thanks for a great update today from the airport. From the Mississauga Board of Trade point of view, current things underway. One is more long-term, and that is our strategic planning process has been ongoing with some member consultations and with our board. And really, it's about the future of the organization in terms of the value-added services and programs we provide to our members. And we have, more and more medium and larger sized members coming on through with MBOT membership. So it begs that we look at our value proposition and ensure that we're providing optimum value for the various types of members that we have, from solopreneurs to large multinationals. And those multinationals, many of them are involved in our Mississauga Economic Recovery Initiative as well. In terms of activities on March 11th, we hosted Minister Algabra, and we're very pleased to have the support of GTAA and the attendance and participation of Deborah Flint at that event. And he did tease out the announcement to come on the Monday, but without giving any details, of course. In terms of upcoming activities, election season, no surprise that we're going to be having some politicians come through. So on April 6th, we're hosting Stephen Del Duca, Liberal Party leader, as everyone knows, for lunch. Not a non-political event that I think would be of interest to anyone with certainly supply chain issues, which is anyone moving goods or looking to procure parts and that sort of thing. We've got the CEO of Walmart Canada with us for a fireside chat. Lisa McLeod, minister responsible for tourism, heritage, culture, sport, will be with us on April 14th. On April 20th, we'll have a reception or annual reception with politicians, locally elected politicians at all levels. Andrea Horvath will join us on April 25th. We still are waiting on a date and a confirmation from Premier's office, but that would cover off the parties, except, of course, for the Green Party. And I'm not sure if we've secured the date with Mike Schreiner, but we're in talks with them about having him out as well. Unfortunately, our awards are on the same night as Brampton, and that's due to the fact that we moved our awards from last fall to May 5th. So you'll have your choice as to which awards you'd like to attend, or maybe you'd like to attend both. But and finally, June 7th will be the date for our annual mayor's address. Which I understand. I'm new on the block still. I'll use that until I am told not to. But June 7th for that. That's essentially the update right now. Lots of good stuff going on, and we're happy to get back into some in-person events. And it is it's everyone's in the same boat, and it's. And it actually, it was refreshing to see or encouraging to see your terminal traffic, your passenger traffic numbers. I know on March 11th, the beginning, really, when everyone was heading off for March break, I think it was at 80,000. And in 2019 at the same time, still some ways to go. I think you're at 140. But that 80 mark represented, I gather, the highest since the pandemic began. So let's just keep it going.
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely. I echo those sentiments and yeah, busiest day of the year on March 11th. And you have the facts and figures just right. So perfect. Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks.
I'll just scroll down the list here. I think we've covered most folks, and Ingrid will tell me if I've missed anyone. Over to Walter Garrison.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Again, congratulations on the announcement. Trevor, it was great to actually be at an in-person event with the minister. So the only update I have is for the in-person event on May 10th and 11th. That's at the International Center. That'll be the Advanced Transportation Manufacturing Summit. So that's focused on aerospace manufacturing, automotive manufacturing, and top of mind with, I'm sure, most people, defense manufacturing as well, too. So this event on May 10th and 11th, we expect to have I've already seen the registrants. I think we've got 100 different companies from all over the world coming, mostly Europe, USA, Canada. And it's a B2B event of buyers and suppliers in those respective industries. And so with the announcements on the travel restrictions being, you know, somewhat lifted as far as testing, I'm sure that's going to be encouraging for people to actually attend from out of country. So as part of the next normal, it's going to be interesting to see how that event goes. But we think it's going to be good for people to get back trying to seal business deals in person, because that's really the one thing that I've heard over the last couple of years, especially with people involved in this sector and manufacturing, is meeting in person to finalize deals and collaborations between companies. So that's my update. Thank you.
Yeah, it's tough to replace that personal touch, right? Thanks so much, Walter. Really appreciate it. I've a couple people left. Margaret Tomei. Mentio.
Hi there. Hi. I don't have anything further to add to the update that Alessandra provided in terms of our support for the federal provincial territorial work on monitoring the recovery of the air sector. So if there's any questions about that, we're happy to answer those. Otherwise, we encourage you to visit the Council of Ministers of Transportation website to review an executive summary of that work.
Perfect. Thanks, Margaret.
Thanks.
Councillor Bradford, I know I just want to give you one last chance. I know elected officials, you're often on the run, so you might have had to step away. And oh, there's Jonathan. And the only other person I think is Avery. You dialed in. So happy to hear an update from you. Yep.
Oh, can you hear me?
We can.
Great. Yeah, so ACTA is delighted with the changes from announced last week. With respect to pre-departure testing, and our members are seeing a significant uptick in reservation activity. One of the new and primary issues we're going to be addressing is labor, the labor issues we're seeing in our sector. Our phones are off the hook, but we have don't have enough people to answer them. Next week, we're participating in IATA's Passenger Agency Program Global Joint Council in Madrid. On a personal note, I'm hoping to change my flight to stop in Toronto Pearson to visit the reopening of the Air Canada Signature Lounge, which is a great announcement for premium passengers in this country. Finally, as an organization, we are deeply concerned and devastated by the horrific activities in Ukraine. We are working along with our board and our membership on a comprehensive volunteer program to arrange support to refugees and aid workers. Not much to see on there. There's work to be done, and we've been liaising with relevant aid organizations and the Deputy Prime Minister's office. But if anyone is or their organization is doing work on the situation in Ukraine, it would be great to hear your experience and challenges. If you want to do so in private, please let me know. That's our update.
Thanks so much, Avery. And I'm glad you mentioned that. It wasn't a purposeful exclusion on our part to not talk about what's going on in Ukraine. I know we're all following it really closely, following the news really closely and doing what we can to help. Obviously, the airport is a conduit for people coming and going from the region. So I'm doing what we can to assist. But yeah, no, really appreciate you bringing that up. On Toronto Pearson side, I think we've covered our update for the most part. We talked about runway rehab. We talked about skills development funding and workforce, what we're doing to address workforce issues on the horizon. I forgot who it was, but mentioned upcoming elections, and we're into budgets, right? The federal and provincial budget. So when we look at the federal budget, we've asked for perhaps most importantly, a reinvestment of airport rent. So we pay rent annually to the federal government, and we're looking to reinvest part or all that airport rent payment into strategic infrastructure projects at the airport. And provincially, we've asked the province for some transit funding for the Eglinton Crosstown West extension to Toronto Pearson, and skills development funding that Ruba touched on earlier. So really appreciate everyone. I thought it was a great meeting. Really appreciate everyone showing up and playing a part. And the next meeting is on June 7th. So we will follow up in writing with anything that's outstanding. And thanks, everyone. Thanks so much. Take care.